Okay, welcome everyone. Thank you so much everyone for joining us this evening. Tonight's year is going to be the first in a four-part series on McGill at Root. And someone gave me the really interesting idea and said, you know what, I would love to learn about the Megillah from different perspectives, which is a really interesting approach. I've only previously taught Megillah at Esther in this way, but through preparing for these shiurim and looking at Megillah at Root through this lens of the different perspectives of the different characters, you can really learn a ton about the Megillah and a lot of things you probably never noticed before. So tonight's year, we're going to first focus on Elimelech. So what we're going to do is we're going to begin by looking into the Psukim. Anyone who previously was able to print out the source sheet or has it on them, great. If not, I'm going to post it in the chat right now. So for anyone who wants to follow along in the source sheet, it's great seeing everybody's faces on the screens. I love seeing people I recognize. Hi, everyone. Okay, great. So we're going to do is we're going to start by looking at the first few psukim in the Megillah. So if we look at Pasuk Aleph in Megillah Rut, it says, Vayehi bimei shvot hashoftim, vayehi ra'av ba'aretz, vayelach ish mibet lechem Yehudala gor b'stei Moav, hu v'ishto u'shnei banav. So a man, it was in the time of the shoftim, and there was a famine in the land, and a man went from Beit Lechem to live in the fields of Moab. And it says, him and his wife and his children went. V'shem ha'ish Elimelech, v'shem ishto Naami, v'shem shnei banav, machlon v'kilion Ephratiim mi Beit Lechem Yehuda. So it tells us their names. It says his name was Elimelech. His wife was Naami. They had two children, Machlon and Kilion. And they left from Beit Lechem Yehuda, and they went to live in Ste Moav, in the fields of Moav. And it says at that point that they were living in the fields of Moav, and Elimelech died, leaving his wife and his two children. So these are the only three psukim that we have in the entire Megillah regarding Elimelech. This is all we know about him. But the amount that you're able to pull out of these three psukim, just about Elimelech and about each of the other characters, is tremendous. So first we were presented with the context, and we said it says, Vayehi bimei shvot hashoftim, that it is in the time of the shoftim. So I want to first look at that. Whenever the Torah gives us a contextual detail, it comes to give us some importance to what we're reading about. The Torah, we believe, doesn't include anything that's unnecessary. So it didn't have to tell us during what time period it was. It could have left that out. So what do we learn from that? What was the time period of the shoftim? Unfortunately, the time period of the shoftim was one characterized by failed leadership. If we look in Shoftim Parak Aleph, it says, Vayehi acharei mot Yehoshua, vayishalu b'nei Yisrael b'Hashem lemor. So it was after Yehoshua died, and b'nei Yisrael come to Hashem, and they say, Mi ya'ala lanu, el ha'knani, batchil hilachim bo. Who's going to lead us? Who's going to lead us against the Knanim? Vayomar Hashem, Yehuda ya'ala, hinei natati et ha'aretz b'yado. And Hashem gives the answer, Yehuda ya'ala. Now, this is a very obscure phrase. What does it mean that Yehuda will rise up? So if we look back at what we know about each of the Shvatim, it says in Bereshit, when Yaakov is giving the bracha to Shevet Yehuda, it says, Lo yasur Shevet mi Yehuda u'michokik bein raglav. So when Yaakov is giving to the bracha to each of his children, he tries to address each of their individual strengths and what their futures will look like. And when Yaakov addresses Yehuda, it says, Lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda, that the staff of leadership will not leave from Yehuda. And the Rashbam explains there, and he says, Lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda, hamalcha shenitin lo lishachavot lav kol achav shnei masar. That he says, what type of leadership is this that will not leave from Yehuda? This type of leadership is that of monarchy. So from the time that Yaakov blessed Shevet Yehuda, he blessed them with leadership and specifically monarchy. So in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, when Hashem answers B'nai Yisrael and says, Yehuda Ya'aleh, that Yehuda will be the one to take over the leadership at this point, it is understood that at that point Hashem is telling B'nai Yisrael, now is the time to establish leadership for B'nai Yisrael, and specifically, now may be the time to set up a monarchy. That if everyone can kind of think ahead to Sefer Shmuel. We know that at that point, Bnei Israel will finally ask for a monarch. And there's a debate there as to whether it was something they should have asked for, should have not asked for. But here in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, it seems that now Hashem is saying, Bnei Israel, Yehoshua has died, and now is the time to look towards Shevet Yehuda, which is the Shevet of monarchy, which is this Shevet that's going to take over in the leadership at this point. Also, just pause here. If anyone has any questions, please feel free to write in the chat and I will address them when we get to them. However, Bnei Israel does not take this directive from Hashem. They do not take this as a time after Yehoshua dies to set up leadership, to set up a real system of monarchy. Rather, it says repeatedly in Sefer Shoftim, Bayamim Hahim, in Melech B'Yisrael, Ish Hayashar Bein Aviasa. It says over and over again, I could have quoted numerous psukim from Sefer Shoftim, but I just pulled out one that it says over and over again, Bayamim Hahim in Melech B'Yisrael, Ish Hayashar Bein Aviasa. At this point, there was no leader in Bnei Israel. Everyone did whatever they wanted to do. And whoever comes to my Tanakh B'Shanah shir, we looked at during that shir, what does it mean that everyone was doing what they wanted to do, and how does this contribute to the problems at the time? But over and over again, it repeatedly says that Bnei Israel did not have any leaders. I see we have a question in the chat. How can they ask for monarchy when they haven't finished the conquest? So it seems to be that at this point, they're saying, we need someone who is going to lead us in our conquest. That they realize that they are only part of the way through the conquest of Eretz Yisrael, and they are in need of a strong leader in order to continue that. And that's why they say to Hashem, who's going to lead us in our conquest? And that's when Hashem seems to point them and say, now is the point to set up a monarchy, and he will continue to lead you in your conquest. So we see that it says that Bnei Israel did not take this opportunity. So then, unfortunately, at the end of Sefer Shoftim, in Parak Chaf, it says, Ve'yakumu ve'ya'alu beit el v'yisha'alu be'elokim. So Bnei Israel come up after another battle, and they say to Hashem, Ve'yomru Bnei Israel, mi ya'ala lanu batchila. And they repeat the exact same wording, and they say, who is going to take over Hashem? Who is going to lead us? L'melchama in Bnei Binyamin, Vayomer Hashem Yehuda Batchila. And Hashem says again, Yehuda Batchila. Yehuda is going to be the one that led you. And whenever there's a repetition in language, it is meant to direct us back to the other times that this language is used. So the fact that Hashem, again, it's the same structure that it says they come and they ask Hashem, and then Hashem answers and says, Yehuda Batchila, is pointing to us, and Hashem is saying, Bnei Israel, you missed your chance at the beginning of the Sefer, and look where we ended up. We are back at the end of the Sefer. There is disarray at the end of Sefer Shoftim. We see the story of Pelegesh by Giva, that there is the mass rape of this unfortunate woman in Giva. There is Pesel Micha. There is the story of Avodah Zarah. They are setting up different types of worship all over. The people of Bnei Israel are floundering at the end of Sefer Shoftim. And Hashem says to them, I told you in the beginning of the Sefer that monarchy and Shevet Yehuda was going to be your guiding light. But you chose to not take that advice. And now at the end of the Sefer, we are left in the same place. So unfortunately, Sefer Shoftim is characterized by failed leadership. So when Megillat Rut points out, Vayehi bimei Shvot HaShoftim, this is the time of the ruling of the Shoftim, it is not just telling us the context so we can imagine what time this is taking place. It's not just, as some say, pointing to the fact that Boaz may have been one of the Shoftim to kind of connect the characters. It's also telling us that Elimelech is living at a time of failed leadership. So that is how we are at first introduced to Elimelech. So through that lens, we're able to begin to understand who Elimelech was. So now we understand the context in which he was living. He is living at a time where the leaders have been failing Bnei Israel, and then comes along Elimelech. So we're going to first, in trying to understand a person, you try to look at any place that Chazal has spoken about them. So whereas we see we only have three actual psukim that talk about Elimelech, Chazal do discuss Elimelech at length. So one point that they that is discussed about Elimelech is his name, like the actual word Elimelech. So in Rut Rabbah and Perek Bet, it talks about Vishim Ha'ish Elimelech, and the name of this man was Elimelech. Rabbi Meir Hayadori Shemo, Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha Hayadori Shemo. So it says Chazal tried to understand the meaning of names. Vishim Ha'ish Elimelech, Shahaya Omer Eli Tavo Malchut. They said the name of this man was Elimelech, and usually we would pronounce that as Elimelech, which is El, Hashem, Li Melech is my God. Usually that's how we would understand the name Elimelech. However, Chazal here understand it differently. They say, Shehaya Omer, Eli Tavo Hamalchut. The kingship will come because of me. That he says, kingship is because of me. That this is not a name that is acknowledging Hashem as God. Eli Melech, that Hashem is my God. Rather, Eli Tavo Hamalchut, that it is because of me there will be kingship, and because of me there will be monarchy. What leads Chazal to this interpretation? We're going to see the actions that Eli Melech does lead Chazal to interpret his name negatively as opposed to the usual positive understanding of this name. So that's what's discussed as his name. They take a positive name and they turn it to the negative. And then they look at his journey. They've looked at his name, and now Chazal begins to look at his journey. The first thing that is pointed out is if we look back at the psukim, sorry, I'm looking over my papers here. It says, "Vehi b'mei shvut hashoftim, vehi ra'av ba'aret." There was a famine in the land. "Ve'yelach ish mibeit lechem Yehuda." When we were first introduced to Elimelech, it is without his name. "Lagor b'stei Moav, huv ishto u'shnei banav." So first, we're introduced to everybody without their names. "V'shem ha'ish Elimelech, v'shem ishto Naami, v'shem shnei banav machlum v'kelyon afratiyem mibeit lechem Yehuda." So Chazal point out that there is a gap between this man and his actions and his name. That this is another reason to understand his name negatively. That originally we would say Elimelech, that Hashem is my God. That is a beautiful name. However, first we are introduced to him without his name, only with his actions. We are told there is a man who left Israel. He left Israel during a famine and he went to live in Moab. By the way, his name is Elimelech. This is meant to point out to us that there is a gap between the way this man is named, which in the vision of Chazal and in customary belief should really reflect a person's being and a person's personality, and the actions that he takes. That the actions that he takes do not align with someone whose name is Elimelech. Why is that? Someone who really believes Elimelech, Hashem is my God, is not someone who would leave Israel and leave his nation during a time of famine. So there are two reasons for understanding Elimelech's name negatively. One is that they say it can be really understood as him being very arrogant and thinking that the kingship comes through him. And the other is that there is a gap between his actions and what his name would usually reflect. And therefore, because of both these things, they do not understand it to be Elimelech, rather Eli Hamalchut, that he is very self-centered, that he is arrogant and thinks of himself, that the leadership and kingship is through him, and he is not focused on the good that is coming from Hashem. And then Chazal go on to understand, okay, we looked at Elimelech's name, so we're trying to understand a little about his essence. And now we're going to look at his journey a little bit. So if we look again in the Midrash in Rut Rabbah, it says, "Vayelach ish gardum." It says, and this man goes, and then it describes it as a gardum, which is a stump. That it says it's kind of like a dead end. "Ela bo ure kama chibiv hakadosh baruch hu biata shel eretz Yisrael yoter miyetziata." So he said, the midrash says beautifully, look how much Hashem loved the coming of the people to Eretz Yisrael as opposed to the people leaving it. What is this in reference to? "Lahalan ktiv be'ezra suseihem pardehem gmalehem baram hachaktiv vayilach ish gardum." What is this midrash talking about? In Sefer Ezra, when it talks about Shivat Zion, the returning to Yerushalayim, it describes every detail of the journey. It describes that the people came with their horses, they came with their cattle, they came with their camels. It describes down to every animal the people who returned to Eretz Yisrael. And it says, how much does it show that Hashem loved when Bnei Yisrael returned to Eretz Yisrael? That he lists every single animal that returned. And they say this provides us such a stark contrast to the pasuk that we're reading here. That here it just says, "Vayelach ish mibeit lechem Yehuda ve'yavo lagor b'stei Moav." it doesn't describe, and he says, and then after, as an afterthought, it says he left with his wife and he left with his two children. Nothing about their journey, nothing about what they took with them. That it says Hashem loved when Bnei Yisrael returned to Eretz Yisrael, and it saddened Hashem so greatly when they left Eretz Yisrael. And that can be noted by the way that their journeys are described. That the journey of return is described in such detail with such love and caring, while the leaving of Eretz Yisrael is described like a stump, as the Midrash says, as a dead end. It's just Vayelech Ish, and the man left. So we see that Hashem clearly disproves of what Elimelech did, that it leads Chazal to interpret his name negatively, his journey negatively, but we're missing the gap. What was it that he did? Why did he leave? What was so bad? We know that Avraham came to Eretz Yisrael and left in a time of famine. And while there are Mefarshim that understand that negatively, this seems so overwhelmingly negative. So what I want to look at now to really understand who Elimelech is and why he is portrayed as such a negative character is look into what was the act that he did. Besides for just leaving in a time of famine, what was the deeper meaning behind this? So if we look in the Zohar Chadash, on 77a, I'm sorry, I try to always give Hebrew and English on my source sheets, but sometimes one or the other is not always available. So I apologize if one is missing. So if we look in the Zohar Chadash, it says, the man's name was Elimelech. How did Elimelech know that strict justice was loose in the world? When he saw that his generation scorned great men, he said, surely I shall go from here so that I will not be caught among them. It brings us back to the Psukim where it says, Vayehi bimei Shvot Hashoftim. And we are going to see that the next few Mefarshim are going to explain this, not only that this was the time of the ruling of the Shoftim, but quite literally, this was the time of Shvot, the judging, Hashoftim, the judging of the judges. And the Zohar is going to point us towards this, and everyone else after this is going to subsequently hint to this. That this was a time that we said was characterized by failed leadership, so much so that we say this was a time of the people judging the judges. That in a typical government, there is some fear of those in charge. Obviously, it should be to a certain degree. We shouldn't live in fear of our leaders, but there should be a certain reverence. And when there is total anarchy and the people have no sense of leaders and no sense of respect for their leaders, and they're actually judging their leaders, that's when we say there's complete political disarray. So the Zohar is saying, Elimelech saw that this was Zman Shvot Hashoftim. This was the time of the judging of the judges. And Elimelech was an important person. As it says in the Pasuk, Vayelach Ish mi Beit Lechem Yehuda, that Ish always connotes importance. That Elimelech was a leader at the time. And he said to himself, I see that the people at this time have no respect for the leaders. And he said to himself, why would I stay in a place where I'm not getting the respect I deserve? This is a time when the people are judging their own judges. I can't be here. So I don't get caught up in this vicious cycle of people judging the ones that are meant to be leading them. So Elimelech, in his self-righteousness, said, if they're not going to respect me and I'm not going to get the respect that I deserve as an important person, I'm going to leave. I don't care if they're in a time of trouble. If this is a time when they truly need leadership, if I'm not getting my respect, and again, I'm in it for myself, if I'm not getting what I need, I'm going to leave. So the Zohar says that was the first mistake of Elimelech, that he saw this was not a time he was going to be respected as a leader, so he left. He abandoned his leadership. And Rashi continues on this point, that it says in Rashi on Pasuk Aleph, Vayilach Ish, Ashir Gadol Haya Uparnes Hador. He says he was a wealthy gadol at the time. He was a really great, important person. Haya Uparnes Hador. He was the one who was providing sustenance for the entire generation. He was really the benefactor of that generation. And he left out of stinginess, out of miserliness. That it says, Elimelech saw that hard times were coming on Bnei Israel. There was a rav, there was a famine in the land. And as the Parnes Hador, the one who is the benefactor of the generation, he knew that all of a sudden the poor people would be coming and knocking at his door nonstop. And as opposed to embracing his role as the benefactor of the generation and someone who's able to support the people, he says, I'm out of here. I can't be people have people coming and asking me for money nonstop. I'll run out of money. So he decides to get up. And at the time that Bnei Israel need him most, he decides to leave Eretz Israel. So again, we see, whether it's from Rashi, whether it's from the Zohar, Elimelech had a role to fill. He had that position of leader to be able to take upon himself that we see that we know at that time was so greatly needed, that he took that opportunity and really dropped the ball, that he really fled from Eretz Yisrael when he was needed most. And the Malbim is going to continue to add, and unfortunately, there's not really going to be many people that positively interpret Elimelech. So if someone's looking for like the shining light in the darkness about Elimelech, unfortunately it won't come. But that doesn't mean there isn't something we can learn from Elimelech. So I want to look at the Malbim now. And the Malbim says, Vayhi bimei shvut hashoftim, yisaper hasiba hania et Elimelech, latzeit me'eretz Yisrael l'chutz la'aretz, mipnei shehaya bimei shvut hashoftim, sha'al hayamim ha'ila omer, bayamim ha'him ein melech b'Yisrael, ish hayashar me'inav yaseh. So the Malbim points to the same point as the Zohar, that this was a time that the people were judging their leaders, as it says that everyone was doing whatever they wanted to do. There was no respect for leadership and no respect for what Hashem wanted to them to do and no respect for what the leaders wanted them to do. V'gam lo haya az shofet echad miyuchad l'kol Yisrael. And it was still, even though we know there were the shoftim at that time, and some of the shoftim were evil, but some of the shoftim were great leaders. But the fact that the leadership was changing so often still provided a lack of consistency and failed to give the consistency that the people of Eretz Yisrael needed at that time. Ki haya bin shofet l'shofet sh'az hayu shoftim rabim chafet yimalei yado. There was no fear, there was no reverence of the Shoftim on Bnei Israel at that time. It says everybody was doing their own thing, life was swallowing them up. They were going along, everyone was doing everything they wanted to do. So Chazal criticize this generation and say, woe is to the nation that judges their own judges. So he says this didn't only apply to the people and their leaders, but this applied to interpersonal relations as well, that the poor people at the time had a lack of fear and had a lack of reverence for anybody, that the poor didn't just come and politely ask for money, and they didn't just come nicely and say, may you please donate to us. Rather, if someone refused to donate to a poor person, they would come and steal or take it forcefully. And there was no justice system to punish them for doing so. And therefore it says Elimelech left to go live in Moab. He was afraid of the poor people, that he was afraid that the poor people would come and they would take everything he had, they would steal from him. But still, Elimelech didn't intend to go and live permanently in Sde Moav. He only intended to dwell there temporarily. Ad yavor za'am, until like this time of terror passed. V'gam lo lagor be'ir v'karach rak b'Sde Moav. And on this point, this is one kind of like bright light about Elimelech. It says he didn't mean to permanently flee. It says specifically he went to live b'Sde Moav. He went to live in the fields. He didn't dwell in a city. He didn't try to integrate into the nation. He tried to stay on the periphery. He tried to stay in the fields as to not get stuck there. Kimit gorar b'sadeh l'fisha'a v'kin hagam shahaya'i ra'av v'yagon lo yatza misham. However, once things did get better, he did stay there. That he didn't get up and leave the second things got better. He stayed too long. Rak isha chad levad v'yeter hashirim lo yishtatfu bazel latzeit me'eretz Yisrael l'chutz la'aretz. So it says 2 points about Elimelech. It says first was that he had the best of intentions in how he dwelled there, that he may have not been it may have not been the best thing for him to leave, but he didn't mean to dwell there permanently. However, it ends off and says, notice that it was one wealthy person that left. That it doesn't say that all of the wealthy people got up and left. It says that one singular wealthy person got up and left, which calls into question further Elimelech's actions. That if it said all of the wealthy people left, you would say, okay, it makes sense. Elimelech was right to fear the poor people. The poor people had no reverence at that time. They may have come and taken everything he had by force. And we would say it seems to be that that was what was happening at the time, so he acted appropriately. However, the fact that it doesn't say that any other wealthy people got up to leave, that it was he alone that got up and left, shows us that it may have been a situation that he was able to help, that the other wealthy people rose to the occasion while he fled and dropped the ball. That he alone left and abandoned his people. So we see that because it was the time of the Shoftim, that there was no fear of the leaders, there was no leadership, there was no appropriate leadership, the wealthy people were living in fear. But Elimelech took this one step further, that it was a time of political disarray, but Elimelech, combined with his self-centered nature, said, I can't stay here. I can't risk losing everything I have to those poor people, even though I may be able to help. I need to protect myself, and I'm going to abandon my post. I'm going to give up any opportunity I have to help, and I am going to leave. Sorry, we have another question in the chat. Why doesn't Elimelech arrange marriages for his sons with Israelite women at least? So many Mefarshim that try to understand the names Mahlon and Kelion, because Mahlon and Kelion means destruction in two different ways, not exactly what you would want to name a child. That complete destruction is not often something you want to remember specifically in your children's names. So many Mefarshim discuss there what the problem was, like why Elimelech, Mahlon, and Kelion all deserve to die in Moab. And this is one of the points that is raised, is that he may have meant to leave, and he thought he would be there temporarily, but eventually he not only settles down, doesn't leave when things get better, but he marries off his sons to Moabi women, which points again to the fact that he ended up getting stuck there. So I would say, I don't know if he intended to marry off his sons to Moabi women, but as his plan progressed, that's what ended up happening. And many Mefarshim point to that that may have been one of his downfalls. Okay, so we see so far, based on the Zohar, based on Rashi, based on Ma'albim, that Elimelech should have risen to the occasion, and instead he completely dropped the ball. So we see that Elimelech not only failed, but he failed when the nation needed him most. And Chazal are not too soft in their words regarding leaders such as Elimelech. That they comment based on a pasuk in Yechezkel. Then in Yechezkel it says, "Kishu'alim becharivot nevi'echa Yisrael hayu." That it says the leaders of Bnei Yisrael were like foxes in the destruction. What does this mean? And the Midrash in Rut Rabbah, in the introduction, actually, to the Midrash in Rut Rabbah, it comments on this pasuk and relates it back to the idea of Elimelech. And with this, we're going to try to draw out an idea. Rabbi Nechemia Patach. So Rabbi Nechemia starts off his speech saying, "Kishu'alim b'charivot neviyacha Yisrael hayu." That the leaders, the Nevi'im of Bnei Yisrael, were like foxes in the destruction. Ma hashu'al hazem mitzupe b'charivot. That just like a fox with fear runs from side to side, they're constantly fluctuating. So too your leaders were like foxes in the destruction. They were so the opposite of Moshe, that Moshe, whenever things got hard, he rose to the occasion. That Moshe Rabbeinu was the complete opposite. That it says the leaders at this time were like foxes. They were constantly darting from side to side. They were running away from anytime there was a slight fear, they ran away from their post. And they say this is the complete opposite of Moshe Rabbeinu. That Moshe Rabbeinu, when the going got tough, he ran towards it. It says it was like Moshe Rabbeinu is known as a shepherd whose flock is caught in a time of darkness. Amad v'gzeira mishalosh richoteha, that Moshe, when he came across a hard time, he got up and he guarded them from all the sides. Nishayer partza v'lo hayasha aligdeira, that whenever there was a breach in the protection of his flock, he rose to the occasion. That if someone broke down the barrier, Moshe was there to protect them. And if a lion came to attack, he was there to protect them. And if a wolf came in and tried to attack, he was there again. However, you did not stand up like Moshe. She'ilu alitem bepartzot kemoshe, that if you had stood up when there was a break in the protection like Moshe had, hayitem yicholim amod b'melchama b'yom af Hashem, then you would have been able to withstand the tough times. That your failed leadership was completely the opposite of Moshe, that Moshe rose to the occasion. Whenever there was a time of hardship, Moshe was there. He was protecting B'nai Israel in the best way that he could. And your leaders at the time, much as we see through this lens of Elimelech, not only were they terrible leaders when there was nothing going wrong, but specifically when the going got tough, they backed down, they ran away, they darted from side to side like foxes in the ruins. So how does it, we understand Elimelech was not a great person, but someone who was brought into a Megillah, specifically when there are so few characters, and specifically if he is brought up, even for so few psukim, must be meant to teach us something. That we see Hashem is trying to teach us a message about Jewish leadership. And he is pointing out, he says, "Vayhi b'meshvot hashoftim." It is presenting it as a time when there was a great need. That if we take a step back and don't just specifically look at this as the historical time period of the Shoftim, we look at Hashem presenting us, this is what happened during a time of need for B'nai Israel. It was b'meshvot hashoftim, the leadership was failing them. Vayhi ra'av ba'aretz, it seems to be that the land was failing them. Which often points to the fact that there was religious failure, because we know that when there is religious failure is when Hashem says that Eretz Yisrael will fail us. So when there is a Rav in the land, we are meant to look at how we are acting religiously. So it is a time of a very low point, politically, religiously, economically, and Hashem is presenting us. So how are we meant to act in that case? And right away, Hashem presents us with Elimelech, that his name connotes that he should be the one who is the most God-fearing, who is able to be in that position of leadership, who should step up to the plate. And it repeats again and again, Mi Beit Lechem Yehuda. And we discussed in the beginning, Yehuda is the tribe of leadership. Hashem is basically planting a neon sign that says, leader here. This is Elimelech. He is supposed to take over. He is supposed to lead you. This is the key to your success. Elimelech is an usher. He is religiously able. Elimelech, he is meant to be God-fearing. And yet right away, Hashem shows, how does one fail when put in that position? What is the key to failed Jewish leadership? Is abandoning the people. That a Jewish leader is not meant to be in it for himself. A Jewish leader is meant to be selfless, is meant to put the people before himself. This is completely antithetical to the meaning of a Jewish leader. That Hashem is teaching us that when it comes to leaders, they should not be for themselves. As we see when they eventually do set up a monarchy, there are so many rules that govern the leader, as opposed to we think of modern day monarchy, where the leader was in complete rule. A monarch of B'nai Israel is meant to be constantly reminding themselves that they are really all just a servant to Hashem and leading us in our mission to get closer to Hashem. So Hashem right away shows us this terrible failure of leadership. And how does this provide a lens for the entire Megillah? So we see right from the beginning that there is a failed leadership. However, then we go on to be introduced to other characters. And that's what we're going to look at throughout the rest of the series. That we see that Elimelech right away passes away. And he leaves a family abandoned. Which is, of course, a microcosm of how he has abandoned the entire B'nai Israel. He has now also physically abandoned his entire family. Machlon and Kilion pass away, and then we are left with the characters of Naomi, we are left with the characters of Rut, we are left with Orpah, and we are left with, later on, we will be introduced to Boaz. Those are the only other characters that we will know by name. We have Ploni Almoni, all these things will be discussed in our later sessions, but we are left with these characters, who now we see Naomi is going to be selfless in that she is willing to send away the only people that she is left with for the sake of their lives. That she is going to send away Orpah, she is going to send away Rut, meaning that she would be left completely alone in the world. A widowed woman at that time would truly be left with nothing, especially one that was in a high position and also abandoned her people. So Naomi chose to be completely selfless after this. Orpah also, we judge her because she's the one that left, but really she did what was normal at that time and she went back to her own people. Rut, we see, is going to be the exemplar of caring for others, that she's going to go against what's best for herself specifically and take care of other people, take care of her mother-in-law, and try to continue her husband's name, continue the family of Naomi and Elimelech. And then we are going to see Boaz, who is going to be the complete opposite of Elimelech, who is going to really rise to the occasion. He is going to rise to a position of leadership, and he is going to take care of everyone else. So we start off the Megillah with this character of Elimelech that is going to frame for us the worst possible scenario of a leader, that a leader who abandons his people in every way at a time when he is needed most. And this is going to lead us into understand the rest of the Megillah and really make all of the characters that are exemplary leaders stand out even more. So I think the message that we can take from Elimelech is that a leader of Bnei Yisrael is meant to be selfless, is meant to take care of others, and remember that he too is just a follower when it comes to serving Hashem, that he is only in a position of leadership in order to lead Bnei Yisrael to serve Hashem. He is not truly in charge, and he is not in it for himself. So the message we can take from this is the idea of selflessness, that we have to always look at our actions and say, are we acting in a way that is caring for the people around us, that is acting in a way that we are meant to in our own personal leadership, whether that's leadership of our family, leadership in our community, and take this message of Jewish leadership truly being for the good of the people to heart, and look through the Megillah through this lens, and we are able to look at all the actions in our lives through this lens. I see that we have one more question. Joshua is a great leader, second only to Moshe, but people don't mourn him at the end of Sefer Yehoshua. Does that mean that the people abandoned their leaders before the leaders abandoned them? That's a fantastic question. I would say that by the time they headed into Sefer Shoftim, as we saw from the first pasuk that we addressed where they come to Hashem, I don't know if it's that they abandoned their leaders as much as with the death of Yehoshua, without a clear guide to who would follow. If you think about it, from way before Moshe died, Hashem was pointing to Yehoshua would be the one to lead. They saw the direct transfer of leadership from Moshe to Yehoshua many times, that Hashem said Moshe had to place his hands physically on Yehoshua to pass that leadership. So Bnei Yisrael got to very concretely see who was going to take over after Moshe, whereas they did not have this with Yehoshua. So by the time Yehoshua dies, they already feel like they're a little bit floundering for a leader, that they don't have anyone, they haven't seen in any concrete way who is going to take over. So I don't know if it's that they abandoned their leaders as much as they feel a little bit lost by the time Yehoshua dies, which definitely lays the ground for this lack of leadership. And that's why Hashem right away gives them that guidance that they should set up the monarchy, which they don't take to heart, which only precipitates negatively the rest of the story in Sefer Shoftim. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining. It was really great learning with you. I look forward to Monday nights. Next week, we'll be focusing on Naomi. So thank you so much for joining us. Anyone who wasn't able to be here, the shiur was recorded.